get ready to untangle the web of misinformation provided by the mainstream media.
These firms are trying to sell you stocks. Their real clients, their banking clients, are trying to get rid of stuff.
And now, here's your host of Wall Street Unspun, the president of Euro Pacific Capital and a licensed broker with a passion for truth. It's Wall Street Unspun with Peter Schiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome again to another live episode of Wall Street Unspun. I'm Peter Schiff, president of Euro Pacific Capital. Author of the best-selling book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. That book, though, was written or came out in February of 2007. At the time, the economic collapse was in the future. It is now in the present. The economy is collapsing before our eyes. We are witnessing it. Very few people understand it, but it is pretty much happening exactly the way I predicted it would. And if you haven't read the book yet, go ahead and read it, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse. You can get it online. You can get it in better bookstores. Try to buy it before the next book comes out, the little book of bull moves and bear markets. That book is coming out. I still believe the date is going to be October. In fact, I'm going to have to work over this 4th of July weekend because I'm trying to get the whole book finished by Monday. And so it's been a really tight schedule. I really wish we could have had more time on this book, as I have other things to do. But the publishers really want to get it out. They really want to market it. I guess they're afraid that the market's going to start to go up, and they want it to come out while the market's going down. They just don't understand that it could be going down for years. So I'm not afraid that the book's going to come out and the bear market's going to be over. That doesn't, you know, I'm not worried about that, but apparently the publishers are. But anyway, that book should be available before the end of the year. And I think it's going to be a lower price point. You know, these little books are smaller, and it's not going to have as many pages as Crash Proof. So it's going to be a smaller book, and hopefully it will sell hundreds of thousands of copies and get the word out faster. But it's still, I think I'm going to reference Crash Proof in that book. So hopefully people will read that book, and then they'll find Crash Proof and pick up some other information that's in the other book. Although there will be, and there is, some repetition. Because obviously a lot of the people that are going to read this book have never heard of Crash Proof, and so there needs to be some of the information repeated in the book. This is a very different audience. The little book, you know, it has there's a following of these little books. You know, Wiley has done about maybe 7 or 8 of them, and they all sell really, really well. So there's already a canned audience that buys the little book, and a lot of these people have no idea who Peter Schiff is. They've never heard of Crash Proof, and so it's going to be a rude awakening for a lot of people. Anyway, I will probably not do the show next Wednesday. I might, but I'm leaving for Vegas on Wednesday. My flight is supposed to get in plenty of time to do the show, but you never know these days with air transportation, and I just might not feel like I might be kind of hectic, and I might try to have John Cataldo do it. I've heard some of you actually prefer when he does it, so for those of you who are John Cataldo fans, potentially he'll do it next week, although I haven't even mentioned it to him yet, so I don't even know if he's available. And maybe he'll have John Brown on. I think he did that last time. So that could be next Wednesday. But either way, it'll be a good show. I'm going to be in Wednesday for the Freedom Fest. We've emailed about that a couple of times. I have many different presentations that are planned. So for the people who are going to come to Las Vegas for the Freedom Fest, we did have over 200 people sign up from my several emails. Which, you know, there's 1,200 people signed up total for the event. So that's a pretty good constituency from Peter Schiff to have 200 of 1,200. I mean, we're, you know, 20% of the entire conference, or 17% of the conference is from me. So that's pretty big. And so I look forward to seeing everybody there who has signed up. As far as media, you know, I finally got back on CNBC for the first time. You know, they've tried to book me several times, and every time someone books me, it's been canceled last minute. Well, this time I wasn't canceled. They followed through, and it should be on. I think the interview is up on our website already. It's certainly on the CNBC website. Yeah, it's on their Squawk Box. I also did, over the weekend on Saturday, this Saturday I appeared on Fox's Bulls and Bears. I didn't do my regular Fox Business show this Wednesday because they didn't have room for me in the schedule. I'm not going to be doing it next Wednesday either because I'm traveling to Las Vegas. So don't look for me next Wednesday on Fox Business. I am still planning on doing it 2 weeks, you know, the following Wednesday. But as of now, I don't have any planned media appearances, although they did seem to indicate that they would be inviting me back on CNBC. So we'll see what happens. But right now, I don't have any particular shows booked on any networks right now. Also, the Barron's article came out. Good piece. It was an interview with me. The guy took hours and hours of interviews. So, I mean, there are a lot of questions I wish and my responses that he would have put in there, but I can't complain. He did a good job. He got a lot of good stuff. There's certain stuff that I would have liked to have been in there, but obviously he has a certain number of words, and he had to cut out a lot of stuff. So, you know, sometimes he doesn't have a complete answer as I would have liked to have had. But overall, I'm very happy with the article and the fact that it's not slanted against me. He just pretty much presents the arguments and gives a neutral introduction to me. So that was good. It's interesting. You know, I sent out the link to everybody to watch it. And if you haven't read it, rather, you know, click on Barron's. I know now there's a few people who have bootlegged it and put it on. You know, you don't have to sign up to read it anymore. I've noticed it online in various places. But I think it's a good – I think Barron's is worth subscribing to. I mean, we subscribe to it. There's a lot of good stories in there, despite some of their infamous bad headlines, the cover stories, like a recent one on buying GE. I mean, not GE, GM. They're pretty good, and I love Alan Abelson, who writes the front column. He even quotes from my commentaries. He's done it four or five times already, so he's very sympathetic to me. And if you want to show your support, you know, sign up for a free subscription. You get 4 weeks, I think, free. You don't like it, you can cancel if you like it, but then you can read it. And I noticed that even before I sent my email out, before I sent the email out to the database, that story, the interview with me, the Q&A, was the most read story on the Barron's webpage for the day it came out, and already it's number one for the week. And that was before I sent my email out to my people on my list, letting them know that it was there. So a lot of people were reading the story. I mean, I don't know when the last time a Q&A was the most read Barron's article, but, you know, it was this time, and it still is, number one for the day and for the week. I'm hoping that it can have enough people to view it to make it number one on the month, you know. So that's the goal, to get up to number one on the month. You know, also I want to thank everybody who went on the Amazon site to click on the links to make the five-star review the number one review. We accomplished that. It is the number one review. Basically, we now know the formula. It's based on helpfulness, not how many people, you know, clicked on it, but how many people thought it was helpful. And now the number one review, the five-star review, has 531 people who found it helpful. And that two-star review that is in second place has 511 people. So it's a close race. So we still probably need some more clicks just in case some of the Peter Schiff enemies decide they're going to combat us and click on the bad review. We got about a 20 quick-click lead. So we need to get a little bit more distance. You know, I noticed somebody has a one-star review on there. And basically his review says, don't give up on the U.S. We can change. Yes, we can. Basically, he doesn't like the book because he doesn't like the conclusion. He's not basically saying that the book is bad. The book isn't. He's just saying, no, don't give up on the United States. Remember, I don't give up on the United States either. I'm still optimistic that we can one day rebuild this economy. But I know that it's got to collapse before it can be rebuilt. Because the one that we have now has got to come down because it's not sustainable. You know, we don't have a real economy now. We have a phony economy. I want a real one back, but we can't get a real one unless we dismantle the phony one. But apparently, you know, since he doesn't like, you know, what I have to say, he puts a one-star review. But there's not too many of those. Anyway, a lot of stuff has been going on. Oh, let me give out the telephone number to call, 888-678-9597, 888-678-9597. Also, you know, one more thing that I've encouraged people to do, and I have no idea if anybody's, you know, done it yet, but I really wish that people would do it. And judging by the success we had with the project on the Crash Proof, maybe we can get this. And that's for people to call up other radio shows. now that the economy is in center stage, you know, call up Rush Limbaugh, call up, Hannity show or Michael Reagan or call up Howard Stern or call up David Ramsey or call up the guy that does that, Bob Brinker. Call up anybody that has a talk show where they talk about politics, the markets, the economy, and bring up the book. Just say, by the way, Mr. Host, have you read Peter Schiff's book, Crash Proof, How to Profit from the Coming Economic Collapse? He predicted everything that's happened. Have you read that book? Do you understand what he wrote? And just introduce the subject. Talk about the book. Talk about the valuable information in the book on what I predicted to get the book discussed. And they'll discuss it. It's topical. And it's free publicity, but people will hear a discussion, will hear the words, crash proof the book, and maybe they'll go to Amazon and check it out, or maybe they'll go into a bookstore and ask for it. So that's the way to really get the word out there in these radio talk shows, because you can call in, and you don't have to say the reason you're calling in is to mention crash proof. You have to have another reason to call and have a legitimate question besides that, but slip the book in there. Have your other question or your comment, and then, hey, by the way, have you read this book? You can just say you're calling to talk about the economy. You're calling to talk about the collapse in the economy, the problems here, problems there. And then part of your discussion is, look, I read this book, Crash Proof, and this is what the guy said. And, he was right on a lot of stuff. So you introduce it into the conversation, because we got to get the word out, because believe me, this is going to get so much worse. When President Obama comes in there, these guys are clueless. They all think this is a failure of the free market, that the problems are the result of not enough government, of too much freedom. They couldn't be more wrong. This is not a failure of the free market. It's a failure of government. It's a failure of intervention. The biggest problem is government setting interest rates. Instead of the free market setting interest rates, we let the government set interest rates. And they set them too low, and they created all the problems. They never would have existed if we let the market determine interest rates. Just like we let the market determine the price of potato chips and the price of tennis shoes and the price of, oil, we need to let the free market determine the price of money. And we know in America the free market price would be a lot higher than the artificial low level that the Fed set. And how do we know that? Well, we had a shortage of savings. We had too much borrowing. What does that mean? Interest rates are too low. In a free market, when you have a country with very little savings and a lot of borrowing, you're going to get a big spike up in interest rates. And that's going to rebalance the economy, because the higher interest rates are going to send two conflicting messages. They're going to send a message to savers to save more money, because you get paid more for saving. And they're going to send a message to borrowers that says don't borrow, because it's going to cost you more to do it. But we didn't do that. We had the Fed keeping rates down, and so we kept encouraging more reckless borrowing, and we kept discouraging savings. And now we're in this mess, because the real estate bubble never would have existed without the low interest rates. Teaser rates, right? The bedrock of the real estate bubble was teaser rates. Without teaser rates, people couldn't have qualified and afforded these mortgages. Well, teaser rates wouldn't have existed without the low short-term interest rates. That's what gave birth to the whole teaser rate concept, because short rates were so low, people could get that low rate for an introductory period. So all these problems have their roots in the Fed. And of course, today, we're getting more power for the Fed. Look at that, that speech that Paulson gave today, which, I don't know why the financials were, rallied a bit on that news. Because what I got out of that speech, Paulson said that we don't want to send the false message that any company is too big to fail, any financial is too big to fail, like Bear Stearns. What he said is that companies are too big to be liquidated quickly, meaning that, yes, we're going to let major brokerage firms fail. We're just going to, handle the liquidation in an orderly manner. Like, we're not going to let it be liquidated in the market. We're going to have the government step in and take over and manage the liquidation. That's what I took for that, which I thought should be bearish for financials, in that it lets people know that there's a lot more downside risk, because if the government's not going to bail everybody out, people got that impression, after Bear Stearns and when they opened up the discount window, that there was some kind of put implicit in buying a financial, in that the government wasn't going to let it go bankrupt. To me, the speech says, no, that's not what they're trying to say, which ultimately is the right thing, right? We don't want to have that moral hazard, but in the short run, it should be bearish for financials. Meanwhile, the Dow itself was down 166 points today. We got new lows for the move. We're now down 21%. Of course, the foreign markets are still actually suffering worse right now. A lot of stocks are getting killed. Today, some of the only stocks that we've had that have been going up, other than the gold stocks, which have been going up, but the energy stocks, some of the natural gas stocks, the oil trust, the coal stocks got clobbered, which have been our best performers. They were down about 14% today. A lot of stocks had even gold stocks, some of them were down quite a bit. But gold was up today. Gold was up $5. Oil was up another $3. Oil was up another $2.60. Silver was up 30 cents an ounce. A lot of the commodity stocks are getting killed. What's happening is I think the ECB is meeting tomorrow morning. They should be hiking rates. I think that scared the market, but, I mean, we're expecting that. We'll see what they state. Also, tomorrow we get the jobs numbers coming out of the U.S., which should be very weak. We had the numbers that came out today, a survey, and they showed very weak numbers. Although the numbers are in reality a lot weaker than what the employment, because the biggest joke now in the monthly employment numbers is the birth-death model. The government assumes that every month a certain number of new businesses are created, and they assume that these new businesses hired people, and that's a big number, and they throw that in to offset the declines. Well, what the government should really be assuming is not that new companies are being born, but that existing companies are dying. In a contracting economy, to assume that all these new businesses are being started is a sham. If anything, small businesses are being destroyed. So the government's going to say that several hundred thousand jobs were miraculously added by all these new companies that came into existence. And, of course, we know that the odds are that none of the companies that the government assumes were born, and in fact, a lot of companies probably died, and they're not assuming that. Obviously, the numbers, for many, many reasons, are much, much worse than what the governor's reporting, but that number is coming tomorrow. But this was a big, big drop that we had, again, in the market. The dollar was very weak. The Australian dollar was up over 1%. It's almost at a contract high. The contract high, the highest the Australian dollar has been, is 95.62. We closed at 95.44, right at a contract high. Same deal with the euro. Euro closed at 158.28, contract high 158.95. We're right near contract highs. The Swiss franc, again, is poised at 99 cents, just below a dollar. Canadian dollar up over 1% today, again, right at 99 cents. British pound, flat, but right below $2. The dollar is just looking extremely weak. It's looking like a collapse could come any moment. And, people are still calling for, the Fed to intervene, the Treasury to intervene, to put teeth in the strong dollar policy. If you go on my website, read the commentary I have on there right now from last week, intervention will not stop the dollar slide. And I write about how ridiculous it is to assume that the Federal Reserve can intervene to prop up the dollar, all right? We've got $75 billion in foreign reserves. That's all the foreign reserves we have. To put that in perspective, and I mentioned this in here, Poland has $77 billion, Turkey has $78 billion, and Libya has $79 billion. So we have less reserves backing up our currency than Poland has backing up its currency, than Turkey or Libya have. That's how pathetic it is. Now, if you want to compare it to China, China's got $1.8 trillion. If you throw in Hong Kong, they've almost got $2 trillion in reserves. Japan's got $1 trillion. Russia's got $550 billion. India and Taiwan have $300 billion. Singapore, a country of 5 million people. Singapore, 5 million people. We got 300 million. Singapore's got 5 million. Singapore has $175 billion in foreign reserves. Almost three times what we have. And they have the population of Manhattan, if not even, in the whole country, $175 billion in reserves. What is the United States going to do with $75 billion? We've got 1% of the world's reserves, 1%. When the Second World War ended, we had more than 90% of the world's reserves. Now we only have 1%. And our reserves represent 2.5%, 2.5% of the average daily volume for all Forex trading. 2.5%. That's it. So, I mean, there's no way we can't intervene. There's nothing we can do, right? It's hopeless. The only policy that we have is rhetoric, because that's all we got. And people are saying the Fed needs to back up its rhetoric, back up its rhetoric. That's its problem. It can't back it up. And, of course, that's what it's afraid, that people are going to find out that it's all empty and that there's nothing they can do, that the strong dollar policy is all hype. It's all wishful thinking, that there's no real policy. There's no real teeth behind it because it's impossible. Now, if the Fed really wanted to do something to defend the dollar, there is something they can try to do. They can stop creating money. They can dramatically increase interest rates. Because 25 basis points, that ain't going to do it. 2%, 2.25, they're not going to make a big difference. They need to really raise interest rates. Well, are they going to do that? Of course they're not going to do that. Of course they're not going to do that. They've given no indication whatsoever that they're going to raise interest rates. And if they did raise interest rates, do you think the market would strengthen on that? Oh, it would go into free fall. The only thing holding up the market is the fact that rates are so low, and that they're, you know, and if you raise those rates, that's the last prop. Now, the market's going to go down anyway, but it's going to go down a lot faster, and there's no way they're going to do that. There's absolutely no way. So that you can talk to your blue in the face about, you know, the Fed, you know, doing something to get a strong dollar, but we can't do anything. I mean, everything we've done is why we're going to have a weak dollar and why it's going to get a whole lot weaker. The problem is if we keep pursuing these policies, the dollar could go to nothing. You know, I heard today that they just printed in Zimbabwe it's some kind of crazy denomination bill for, you know, and the inflation rate now in Zimbabwe is 1,000% a day. So prices go up 10 times every day in Zimbabwe from the morning to the night. So something that costs $10 when you wake up, it costs $100 when you go to bed. It costs $1,000 the next day. Actually, these aren't really the numbers. There's nothing is that cheap in Zimbabwe. So you wake up and something costs you $100 million. You go to sleep, then it's $1 billion. By the next day, it's $10 billion. The day after that, it costs you $100 billion. And then the following day, 3 days later, it costs you $1 trillion to buy what was, you know, this is what's going on in Zimbabwe. Now, people say, well, you know, this can't happen in America. Well, why not? I mean, sure, America is not Zimbabwe, but you know what? We've got Zimbabwe's monetary policy. You know, inflation didn't start out this bad in Zimbabwe. It just started out and got worse. And because Zimbabwe kept printing, they didn't do the right thing. And that's the path that we're on now. Anyway, let me take a quick commercial break, and I will be back for your calls.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that has passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back, and just a couple of quick words on, you know, the foreign stocks that have been dropping and, you know, again, you know, getting more emails and seeing people concerned. You know, when we buy stocks, you know, we know that stocks are volatile. We're buying stocks because I think ultimately this is the best place to be. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that we've recommended is actually going up now. Remember, if you look at Crash Proof, if you look at my advice, at my portfolio, I recommend, you know, the lion's share of investments being, you know, dividend-paying foreign stocks. I also recommend a waiting, 10 or 20% waiting in precious metals. Precious metals are near the highs. Gold is at 950. Silver is 18 and a quarter. Those prices are doing well. I also recommend commodities. Commodities are doing very well. The actual commodities themselves, the commodity stocks have all been getting clobbered. I also recommend a 10% or so weighting to foreign currencies, 10 or 20% just cash, liquidity. But I recommend my liquidity in the euro and the Singapore dollar, the Australian dollar. Those currencies are at their highs. So parts of my recommendations are doing very, very well right now, even as the markets collapse. But obviously, the stock recommendations, they're the most vulnerable. They're the ones that have the potential to drop. But I also think that other than precious metal stocks, which and many of the juniors are just really weak. I mean, the only gold stocks that I have that are making new highs, Goldcorp is, I think, my second biggest position personally in a gold stock, and it made a new high. It actually ended up closing lower today by $2, but it made a new intraday high. But a lot of the junior stocks, I bought some more junior stocks today. Some of them are near their 52-week lows. But these are the stocks that I think ultimately have the most potential to go up the most. And that's how I feel about a lot of the foreign stocks that we're buying. Other than gold stocks, I think they're going to deliver the best bang for our buck over the long run. But over the short run, they're going to be the most volatile and be the most susceptible to short-term panic or selling or margin calls or whatever. So people have to make sure that when you buy these stocks, it's with the understanding that it doesn't mean that these stocks are going to go up when the U.S. stock market goes down. It doesn't mean that at all. What it means is that they're assets that are real, that provide, goods or services that I think are not highly speculative, that have good, solid income streams. It doesn't mean that they're not going to vary. It doesn't mean that none of these companies will be at a point where sometimes they have to cut their dividends and other times they'll be able to raise them. But the idea is to own tangible stuff, because ultimately, if the governments respond to all this by printing enough money, that simply owning currencies is not going to do it. I'm sure there was a lot of volatility in Zimbabwe, but the Zimbabwe stock market has held up very good. And if somebody was in Zimbabwe and they threw all their Zimbabwe dollars a few years ago into the stock market, I'm sure that there were times where the market, dropped quite a bit, but the people who bought stocks have a lot more money than the people who bought Zimbabwe dollars. And the people who have Zimbabwe dollars, maybe they didn't lose anything. Maybe if somebody had a billion Zimbabwe dollars, And they put it in the bank if they didn't want to risk losing in the stock market, and now they have those billion Zimbabwe dollars, big deal, it's worthless. But the billion dollars that was in the stock market, it could now be trillions. So I think that, we're investing for the end game, and once you buy a lot of these stocks, if they go down, they go down. I mean, don't even worry about it, because at the end of the day, you're measuring it in a currency that could be worthless. So it doesn't really matter what the statement says. Because this is it's like the dollar is what you have to get rid of. And for those of you who don't want to be in foreign stocks because they're uncomfortable with the volatility, then you got to buy other assets like foreign bonds, like just bullion. But the last thing you can do is say, you know what? I don't like volatility. I don't want to risk my account going down, so I have to keep all my money in dollars. Because if you do that, you might go broke or you'll certainly lose a lot of wealth, and you could become completely broke, because it's the dollar that you need to worry about. It's the value of the dollar. It's what you can buy with the dollar. That's the problem. That's why we're investing abroad in the first place, to get out of dollars. And we don't know exactly when the dollar is going to collapse. I think that day of reckoning is a lot closer now than it's ever been, and I think it's a lot closer than a lot of us probably think. And I even think that the economy is unwinding at an even more rapid pace than I would have imagined it would when I wrote Crash Proof. Anyway, let me go ahead and grab the calls. People have been waiting. First caller is Dan from New Jersey.
Hey, Peter, how's it going? I gave you a hand on Amazon. I'm glad it helped. I have a question. I'm having a problem basically convincing my family. I mean, I've heard both sides of the story, and I agree with most of what you're saying. I think you're right on the money. But, I'm trying to get my money out of the dollar, but my family, when I tell them that the dollar is going to crash and to get out and that there's a chance that the economy might collapse, they look at me like I'm crazy. And, I've been trying to get them to read your book, but they think that you wrote your book just, to promote your company, and they think I'm gullible. for, you know, actually listening to what you have to say and agreeing with you. So I'd like to...
I mean, there's a common criticism, right? Yes, he writes the book because he wants to promote his company, which, of course, I did. I mean, everybody who has a business wants to promote that business. I mean, that's... I mean, there's no secret about that, right? I mean, I'm a brokerage firm, so I want to call attention to myself. I want to get clients. But you have to look at, you know, you putting the cart before the horse. The reason that Euro-Pacific Capital exists, the reason that I recommend foreign stocks, the reason I recommend gold and foreign currencies is because I believe the dollar is going to collapse. So given that knowledge, given I have this knowledge and I understand what's wrong with our economy, and I understand what's going to happen. Obviously, so now I set up a business that can enable me to profit based on that knowledge, based on spreading that knowledge. And so I'm going to try to spread it any way I can. I go on television. I'll do this radio show. I'll write a book to get that message out there. But the message is going out there because it's what I believe. I set up a company to help me accomplish this because that's what I believe in. So they make it out like, look, I just happened to get a job at Euro-Pacific Capital. And I said, well, what does Euro-Pacific Capital do? Oh, they sell foreign stocks? Oh, okay, whatever. I'll write a book that recommends buying foreign stocks. I mean, that's not how it happened. If I was bullish on America, if I thought the U.S. economy was a genuine success story right now, and I thought that the best place to invest was in America, then I wouldn't have named my firm the way I did. I would have written a completely different book. I would have wrote one of those Dow 36,000 books. You know, I would have been very bullish. So the book reflects my opinion. You know, and sure, do I want people to read that book and become clients? Of course. Sure, do I want to make money? Yeah, I want to make money. But also, I know that somebody who reads that book and follows my advice or calls my company, they're going to be better off. I'm going to help that person. And if I can help somebody out and make a profit for myself in the process, then that's what capitalism is all about. And so people shouldn't say, hey, he's trying to promote his business as if, you know, that's a bad thing. You know, I mean, what if there's a boat that's sinking? And I come over and I got a lifeboat and I say, hey, you want to get in my lifeboat? It's a $5 ticket and you can get in my lifeboat. And you're going to say, you're just trying to sell tickets. You know, yeah, but I got a ticket. You're going to sink if you don't get off that boat. So isn't it a good thing that I came over here with this lifeboat and I give you the opportunity for $5 to avoid drowning to death? You know, just because I've got a vested interest in getting you on this lifeboat doesn't mean that you should ignore it, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So you just, you know, just let them know. And look at what does the rest of Wall Street do? Like they have clean hands? You know, whose advice are you going to listen to? I mean, look at UBS, right? UBS now is being sued. And, you know, they're one of the big guys that was in there in these auction rate preferreds, where they were given, you know, they were getting their clients to buy these auction rate preferreds. We never bought them for one Euro-Pacific Capital client. They were very popular. We could have easily bought them. We didn't do it. And in the investigation, they uncovered these memos, emails within UBS, where they're basically saying, we got to get rid of this crap. This paper is going to, you know, we got to sell these auction rate prefers. We got to get them off our books. And then the emails, yeah, we're doing everything we can. We have a full press marketing effort to unload them. Who are they unloading them on? Their customers. They know this stuff is bad, and they're giving it to their customers. And you think they're telling their customers, oh, you know, you got to buy this because it's worthless, and we want to get it off our books before it explodes? No. I mean, all these firms, I mean, you know, all the big brokerage firms, they all have their own agenda, and their agenda is everything is great. Buy, buy. And that's, they're going to say that no matter what, because that's all they're ever going to say. I don't have an agenda. I'm a little firm. My firm reflects what I believe. I can change on a dime. I can become the biggest bull on the U.S. economy. And in fact, from a purely monetary thing, for me, if I wanted to make the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time, what I would do is get bullish on the U.S. market. Because I've got all my clients in foreign stocks. I got all my clients in commodities, in gold. I work on commission. So if I called up 10,000 people through all my brokers and said, hey, it's time to bring back the U.S., I would make more money than I've ever made in my entire life. So, I mean, that's my incentive. Why don't I do that? Because I don't think it's right long-term for my clients, and I don't think it's right long-term for me. I think I'll make more money by not doing that over the long term. But in the short run, that's where I'd make the most money. You know, so there's a lot of criticism that's leveled at me. Oh, he's just trying to promote his book. He's trying, but none of that is, you know, none of that defeats the message. And I would be an idiot not to try to promote my business, especially if the business is going to help people. If it's a message that needs to get out, it needs to be told. So, you know, have them read it, and then, you know, they can judge. They can read the book and say, look, remember, he wrote this book a couple of years ago. And compare that to the nonsense that Wall Street was putting out a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think your videos are going to help too. But I'm trying to get them to watch them, the stuff you have, the archives on your site. But it's a little tough to get convinced them. But I think once they start, you know, hearing, I think they're gonna catch on.
Well, it's important. You know, I did like a two-hour interview today for one of the major business magazines in Japan, and it'll be coming out in August. And it's only in Japanese. But I sat with the guys for a couple hours, and, you know, they understand what's going on. I mean, they ask me, you know, why don't Americans understand this? Why don't they appreciate that how bad the situation is? I said, well, you know, they're in denial. Americans are just so wrapped up in ourselves, or we're so egotistical. You know, we think that the United States is so great, and in our minds, nothing can go wrong here. So when you talk about the U.S. economy collapsing, they think you're nuts. It's something that is impossible. But, you know, just because everybody thinks something is impossible, you know, the Titanic was unsinkable and it sunk. You know, the Big Brown was unbeatable, and not only was he beat, he came in last in the Belmont. I mean, there are a lot of things that people take as a foregone conclusion, and then it changes. And, you know, I use the example of the Soviet Union. I mean, the Soviet Union was a superpower one day, and it vanished almost overnight. So things can change, and this attitude is going to change. Remember, you know, it wasn't a couple of years ago, people thought buying subprime mortgages was a good idea. People thought that, you know, you can loan money to people with teaser rates and no down payments, and it was great business, you know. And now no one will touch you with a 10-foot pole. So things change, and your parents are going to figure out sooner or later that I'm right. Hopefully, for their sakes, it's sooner, because if they figure it out later, it's going to be too late to protect their wealth.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Next call is Richard in New York.
Yeah, how you doing, Peter? Congratulations on your recent media exposure. I did see the article in Barron's and read it, as well as catching your CNBC appearance. And they did seem quite encouraging to have you come back, so take them up on that.
Well, invite me. They haven't invited me yet.
Well, they indicated they wanted to have you back, so hopefully we'll take them at their word that they were sincere. Because I think that would be helpful. In any event, I'm really calling you. You've addressed some of the issues that I wanted to talk about quite thoroughly. But my situation was this, Peter. It was several months ago that I was in a New York City bookstore and just saw your book by happenstance and picked it up because I thought it was quite interesting. I read it and thought it was very persuasive, certainly because when it was written, all the things that you had forecasted seemed to have come true, and even more so now to date. And so I took monies that basically I've been holding in cash, and I have an account now with you. I've had for perhaps now 3 or 4 months. My concern, though, is that, you know, bottom line, it's about preservation of capital, and it's about trying to grow one's wealth, you know? And what I'm finding is that the monies that I have invested, I've seen a diminishment of that because, obviously, some of the stocks are volatile, and it's been a difficult 3 or 4 months.
You don't keep score on a weekly or monthly or even on a yearly basis. I mean, my point is, it doesn't matter. Let's say somebody sends me $100,000, and 3 months later, the account is worth $900,000. People, oh, look, you've lost me 10% of your money. This is a lousy, you know. But no, I mean, that you know, if you went to sell everything, yes, you would end up with 10% less money. But that's not what we set out to accomplish. We didn't set out to accomplish an account that you can trade out of in 3 months and make a profit. I mean, if that was our objective, I would tell you, don't even send me your money, because I don't know where the market's going to be in 3 months, and it doesn't even matter to me. What matters to me is you have $100,000 that are going to be worth a lot less in the future than they are today, and which may one day be worth nothing. The stocks that we're buying you are not going to be worth nothing. I mean, is it possible that one of the stocks that we buy could go bankrupt? Of course, anything is possible. That's why we diversify. But the odds are, if I buy you a pipeline or a refinery or an office building, or I buy you a real asset somewhere, that it's always going to have intrinsic value. It's always going to throw off income that you can use. The dollars that you send me, that's not the case. You know, wake up one morning and they're just as worthless as the Zimbabwe dollar. So when you establish the account, you can't look at the total value of the account. You can look at your dividend income and say, what kind of yield is it throwing off of? It doesn't really matter what you can get. And I've used the example of someone who buys a house. When you go and buy yourself a house, and let's assume that there's, forget about the real estate bubble, I'm talking about normal times. You go and buy a house, right? The minute you buy that house, you don't have it appraised every day to figure out what you could sell it for. In fact, if you bought a house and every single day you had to figure out, you went to sell it every day and you had to find who's the best buyer, how can I sell my house today? You might buy a house for $500,000 on Monday. If you had to turn around and sell it on Tuesday and you had to be out by the end of the day, you had to sell it, maybe you'll be selling it for $300,000. You don't know. Maybe the next day you'll get lucky and you'll find somebody you can sell it for more than you paid. But it doesn't. No one does that with their house. They don't have an auction every day to determine what it's worth. But that happens in the stock market because they're liquid. You can actually see the transactions, and people see those transactions, and they think they mean something when in most cases they mean nothing. Now sometimes they actually do mean something. Sometimes you know, your companies are in trouble for a real reason, not simply the market or liquidity or other exogenous factors. But you can't look at it. And I made the same argument to people, during the 1990s when I was trying to get people out of the tech market, out of their internet stocks. And they would tell me how much money they're making. Last month I made 10%, or last year I made 60%. I said, well, you haven't made anything. Have you sold your stocks? No, you haven't made anything. And ultimately, when the internet stocks collapsed, all those paper gains meant nothing. The fact that somebody's account went from $1 million to $5 million, right, meant nothing when the account was back at 100,000. None of those paper profits were real. The fact that they had gains for a while, in the end, it didn't mean anything. And this is a line that I made up in the 1990s. I said the only thing you're going to have to show for the internet bubble is the memory of the profits that you never took. And I said that in the 90s, and it came true. And so the same thing is going to be true, I think, with these foreign stocks that have gone down. In the final analysis, the only loss that's going to remain is your memories. Because in the final analysis, whatever the short-term decline is, it's going to be more than offset by what these stocks are ultimately worth, especially in U.S. dollars. And it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter that they went down before they went up. And I mentioned in another show, some of my biggest gainers, personally, some of the stocks that I still own today that are up 5-10 times or more from what I paid were originally down by 50% or more after I bought them. And I remember I remember how upset I was at that one stock that I bought at $5 that went to 25 cents. And I remember how I felt about that. And I was like, And of course, that was one of the best opportunities I could have had because I could have bought so much more of it because then it went from 25 cents to $20. But, I bought a little bit more, and I benefited. But even the stock I bought at $5, I made a lot of money on. But, it doesn't always go up the minute you buy it, especially now. I mean, stocks are very weak. Now, you can easily say, well, look, since stocks are weak, I'm not going to buy them. Well, but when do you buy them? How do you know when they're going to turn? I don't know. I can't figure that part out. I know the end. I know how it's going to end up. And I know that historically, there are times when stocks are cheap, and there's times when they're expensive. And around the world, in general, I think stocks are cheap, especially the ones that we're buying. Does that mean that they can't get cheaper? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I mean, I mentioned that, I use the analogy, you're shopping, and you go into a department store, and there's a shirt that you like, and it's marked down 50% off. And you like it, and you think it's a good price. Maybe you buy the shirt. Now, you might think, you know what? Why don't I not buy it? I'm going to come back next week. Maybe it'll be 70% off. Maybe they'll mark it down again. And maybe they will, but you know what? Maybe they won't. Maybe somebody else is going to buy it at 50% off, and when you come back next week, it's not going to be there. Or maybe they'll have it, but now they won't have your size. I've always said if you get a good value, if you see value in a company, and you like the price, and it makes sense, buy it. Don't worry if somebody else gets a better price than you. Because the risk is there's always a chance that a stock can go down. You never know when the bottom is. But if you think it's a good deal, you buy it. And years later, it's not going to matter. And I can tell you again, personally, I am a lot more frustrated by the opportunities I missed on stocks that I could have bought even cheaper that ultimately went up a lot. And I have a lot more of that in those memories than stocks that went down and I was pissed because I didn't sell them. Way more times is that I was pissed that I didn't buy more when they went down.
Yes, that's where that intestinal fortitude comes in, I guess.
Well, you got to know yourself, and you got to know how much money you're putting in, and you got to know what your time horizon is. But again, ultimately, look, I had a client, some guy cashed out his whole account. He had about 104,000, 105,000, and he was still up a little bit. I think he started with 100, he was telling me he couldn't take it anymore. He was going to puke. I got to get out of everything. And I'm like, puke? I mean, the guy wasn't even losing money. I mean, he was down from his highs, but he didn't have less than he sent me. But he's so worried, now this guy is going to put all his money in gold because he knows the dollar is going to be worthless, but he's worried about these stocks. I mean, some people get very, very worried. I mean, but I've always said to people, look, you're going to put all your money in gold? I mean, what if we're not right? I mean, if I'm right, yeah, maybe having an all-gold portfolio is the way to go, right? If I'm right, and I probably am right, but I try to give advice based on what if I'm wrong? What if I'm completely wrong? What if I'm the nut, right? What if your parents are right, or was that you that mentioned your parents?
The former caller. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. What if his parents are right? I'm the crazy one. Well, if I bury everybody in gold bullion and it drops from $900 an ounce down to $400 again or $300, I mean, I've lost everybody a lot of money and they've got no dividends. That's why I like the stocks, because I figure if I'm wrong, these stocks are still good investments. Maybe they'll go down for a while before they go up, but, if I'm wrong, they're still good investments.
Well, Peter, I thank you. Thank you for your candor and obviously all the work that you do. And I am in it for the longer term. It's just a matter of, I think, being patient. We're so used to, as you say, keeping an eye on it from moment to moment, and that's just probably not a strategy that makes sense in this case.
All right. Well, thanks for the call.
You bet.
All right. Let me quickly take one more quick break, and then I think we have three more callers, so let's keep those as the last callers.
Euro Pacific Capital is an independent brokerage firm on a mission to inform its client base and prospective clients about economic and market events that could affect their financial security. Euro Pacific Capital seeks to provide solutions which are intended to provide safety, not risk. Solutions designed to protect our clients and their families from the U.S. government and its inflationary practices. The time to act is now, while you still have the opportunity to get your money out of the dollar. It's legal to do so, and after a consultation with one of Euro-Pacific's brokers, you will understand how this decision could ensure your financial security. We offer a full array of services ranging from retirement and trust accounts to complete financial planning, checking accounts with or without debit cards, and life insurance, even annuities. With our independent, no-nonsense investment advice that's a cut above the run-of-the-mill commentary that is passed for research for far too long on Wall Street, we suspect investors will find a home at Euro Pacific Capital.
Okay, we are back. Let me go right to the phones and back to Ken in Michigan.
Peter, last week I told you about the counterparty risk that I've got with using those Lehman Brothers ETFs to short the market, and I asked you, did you ever think it'd be possible that the feds would say, hey, we're sick and tired of that bailout thing, and we maybe just decide we're not going to bail anyone out? Didn't it sound like this is what Mr. Paulson was saying today, that he's removing that floor under these financials that people thought was there?
That's what I said earlier in the show. When I heard him say that, that was the reaction that I had myself. But it didn't seem that anybody else had that reaction. I mean, obviously, you're coming to that conclusion, but I didn't get that in the financial media that that's what he was saying, but that was my take on it.
He flat out said, the only way anyone's going to get a bailout is after they've actually filed a bankruptcy, and then only with presidential approval. In other words, like with what happened to Bear Stearns, they bailed them out to prevent a bankruptcy, and sound from what he's saying today, it sounds like he's saying no help unless you've actually filed a bankruptcy and then only presidential approval. So to me, it sounds like he really pulled the rug out, you know, that safety net or the backstop, as they sometimes call it.
So that's what was my take, and I would have expected a worse reaction than the one that we got. So maybe it's coming. Maybe it's a delay. But, I mean, you know, and now Lehman Brothers actually, too, rose today. I think they made an announcement that they're gonna give a higher percentage of their employees pay. They're going to pay in stock versus cash, which preserves their cash, but ultimately that's not good for the company because they're just diluting the stockholders and giving out even more shares of stock. What they should have announced is that instead of paying a higher percentage of the salaries in stock, they should have announced that they're going to cut the bonuses or cut the salaries.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, it sounded to me from what he said, you know, when he says, he actually used the word, unless there's an actual bankruptcy filing, nobody's going to get any handouts. And you know, if that would have been the case with Bear Stearns, I mean, they wouldn't have gotten a dime, you know, until they actually went to zero and filed bankruptcy.
Yeah, that's the case. Anyway, let me hop. I got a couple more calls and only 10 more minutes.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. You know, quickly too, you know, I didn't mention the move. GM, General Motors, down 15% today, closing at $9.98. It's now a single digit midget. The market cap on General Motors is now 1/25th. The market cap of Toyota. It would take 25 GMs to equal one Toyota. And, of course, it's going to get worse because GM is potentially on the verge of bankruptcy. I was predicting that years ago. Go back to some of my earlier newscasts and broadcasts. I talked about GM. I talked about them going bankrupt. I talked about all the problems. There was even an article in the New York Post a couple days ago where the reporter actually mentioned in the article that based on an article he wrote a couple of years ago, I had predicted that GM would collapse and their shares would fall into the low teens by the end of this year. And, of course, when I talked to him, the stock was in the 30s, and I talked about going bankrupt. And here we are. It's actually in the single digits before the end of 2008. It was even weaker than what I said it would be. Ford Motor, the same thing. Ford down 7.5% today, new record low, $4.36. These companies are imploding. You know, auto sales now are the lowest they've been in over 10 years, including the recession in 2001. So apparently, according to the government, we're not in a recession, yet auto sales are lower than they were when we were in a recession. This, again, shows you how the government's phony numbers do not jive with reality. Let's go to Tom in Texas.
I'm a client. I have a couple accounts with you. Loved your book. You definitely have a crystal ball when it comes to economics. What about when it comes to my, you know, I'm just like the rest of these guys. My account's been taking a hit. Not a big deal. I'm in it for the long term. My real question is, do you have any feeling at all or opinion on are these foreign markets going to follow the U.S. market down to oblivion?
No, well, look, if all the markets go to oblivion, you don't have to worry. As long as you lose less than everybody else, you're better off, right? If all the markets go down, if every single asset on this planet loses value, then you're okay because, you know, everybody – prices are going to have to collapse, too, if that's the case. So it's like if you go to an auction and you bring $1,000 and everybody else brings $10,000, you're not going to get much stuff. If you go to another auction and you bring $100 and everybody else has $10, even though you have less money, you're better off because you have a lot more than everybody else. So if everything goes to hell in a handbasket, I still believe that the foreign stocks are going to go down a lot less. Now, it might not look like that for the last month. For the last month, foreign stocks have been weaker than the U.S. Even though the U.S. has been leading the way down, foreign stocks have fallen more. I think this is a temporary situation. I don't think this is permanent. I think that the major problem is with America. We're the country that is the focal point of all the world's problems because we're the ones creating the imbalances. We're the ones that aren't saving. We're the ones that aren't producing. We're the ones that are borrowing all this money. We're the ones that are pushing the inflation around the world. And I think ultimately America is going to have to suffer a markdown of its assets. We are going to have to be a lot poorer than everybody else who's actually doing the producing and doing the saving. That's going to be the realignment. So I know that Americans are going to lose wealth relative to foreigners, which means our assets are going to go down relative to the rest of the world. It doesn't mean it's going to happen every day. And, you know, a lot of people who have opened up accounts, I mean, almost everybody who's opened up an account in the last couple of months has got to be down in dollars right now, unless all they bought was gold. You know, we have some clients that just bought gold. They just bought gold. It's fun. They could be up. But if you have foreign stocks, normal stocks, utilities and pipelines and trusts and whatever it is that we buy, they're all down. I mean, some of these stocks are down 10, 20% or more. Some are up. You know, if you have a full portfolio, not every stock is going to be down. But on balance, we've got more stocks down than up. You know, it doesn't mean that what we're doing is wrong. It just means that these stocks went down. Does it mean that you could have been better off if you waited and invested today? Yes, obviously. Would it have been better if you just put your money in Swiss francs or euros and held the euros for a while and then switched into stocks? Yes. You know, with a crystal ball, it's easy to know in hindsight the exact thing that you could have done to have a better result. But I can tell you this. The people who opened up an account with me and who put their money out of the dollar into foreign stocks are ultimately going to be a lot better off than the people who didn't do anything, even though the people who didn't do anything on paper appear to be better off right now. They're still on a Titanic, and they're still going to go down with the ship when it sinks, and you're in a life raft. And it doesn't matter if it's a little choppy and you're getting wet, you're at least not going to sink.
This is what I thought anyway. I just love to hear agreement. I feel better. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. The last caller of the night is going to be Ken in Ohio.
Yeah, hi, Peter.
Hey, Ken.
Yeah, this is Kevin, actually.
Oh, Kevin, yeah.
Yeah, I caught your appearance on Squawk Box the other morning, and I guess I had a comment. I've watched a lot of your other clips on the other shows you've done, and a lot of people, they like to argue about the CPI numbers, and, you know, you generally always assert that they're not correct, and my question is, I don't really understand what they think CPI is actually measuring. I mean,
they think it's measuring inflation.
Shouldn't you just
obviously not?
If you really want to measure inflation, shouldn't you just look at the increase in the money supply?
Well, yeah, but they don't want to look at that.
But I mean, if you look at the CPI, all that's really measuring is the economy's ability to deal with the inflation.
Well, actually, no, it's not even measuring that because the CPI itself is not honest. That's
yeah.
What CPI used to measure 10, 15, 20 years ago. It doesn't even measure that anymore because the CPI is useless because it isn't even a fixed basket of goods. It shifts. The government changes it month to month. They have hedonic adjustments. They have substitution. They have geometric pricing. It's all a political tool. All government numbers now, whether it's unemployment, and as I said, if you're unemployed, if you take a part-time job, you know, working at McDonald's because you were laid off as an engineer and you used to make $100,000 a year, now you're making minimum wage while you're looking for a job, according to the government, you're not unemployed. If you lose your job and you decide to open up a store on eBay and sell the used stuff out of your attic so you can help feed your family, now you're not unemployed anymore. You're self-employed working on eBay. It doesn't matter that you're only making, you know, $100 a month. You're still not unemployed. This is all nonsense. These types of people would have been counted as unemployed in the past. They don't count them anymore. So unemployment, the economy, the inflation rate, these are all tools of the government. Politicians constantly change the way we measure the economy so it can appear that they're doing a good job. You know,
but shouldn't they be looking at other things that could actually more closely?
Yeah, but let me finish
like,
this point.
Commodities, anything like that.
Let's say I'm a teacher, and you know, I have a bunch of students, and I don't really want to do a good job. I don't want, and that my kids aren't learning anything. Well, I constantly change the curve, and so let's say they're all getting C's, and all of a sudden next semester they all get A's. It's like, well, you're doing a great job as a teacher. No, I just defined 70% as an A now instead of a C. So I changed the way I grade them so it looks like I'm doing a good job educating them. But I didn't do a good job at all. I just changed the methodology for grading their success. And now C performance is A performance. That's what the government does with these statistics. Now, what's your question? Yeah, I couldn't hear what you're saying because I wanted to mention that student thing because I thought it was good.
Other things that they could, if they really truly wanted to measure inflation, shouldn't they be looking at other areas? I mean, like a business, if you're looking at a finished good, I mean, a business can cope with inflation. They can cope with government inflation. They can move the jobs to China, get
the government
lower their costs that way.
Yeah, the government
doesn't get passed on.
The government doesn't want to accurately measure inflation. They want to hide it. They want to lie about it. You know, so that's what they're doing. And it's amazing that nobody else can figure this out. That people on, you know, like CNBC, take these government statistics like they're on tablets with Moses carrying them down from Mount Sinai. These aren't from God. These numbers are coming from government. They're coming from politicians, and they've got an agenda. And these are all political. And that they can't see that, I'm going to look at my eyes. I'm going to look at reality. And, you know, and I tried to bring this point up, too, on a show on Fox. How is it possible that all these countries around the world that have currencies that are going up, they have inflation higher than ours? How is that possible? How is it possible that so many other countries have double-digit inflation right now, and America, the source of it all, we don't have any inflation at all? This is nonsense.
I think I ran over. Are we still broadcasting? Anyway, yeah, the show is ending. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure to get to the website, www.europac.net, 800-727-7922, 800-727-7922. I'll see some of you next week in Las Vegas, and I may or may not be doing the show from there next week. I will be back in 2 weeks if I'm not. Thanks for listening, everybody. And remember, Crash Proof, how to profit from the coming economic collapse.